Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Jane reading from the Tuesday, February 1, Midland Reporter Telegram. Second Intercession Week nears. Midland ISD provides extra help to students who need it during break. Midland ISD officials are reaching out to the 7,700 students invited to take part in the Spring Week of Intercession, which will take place next week. The Midland ISD calendar shows intercession is set for February 7th through the 10th for students in elementary school, junior high, and high school. The purpose of the intercession, according to the district, is to provide opportunities to support student learning and academic growth. MISD elementary and junior high students will attend full-day sessions, the district said on its website. High school students may be required to attend half-day sessions for EOC English 1 and 2 and Algebra 1, or a full day for both. High school students can use the non-required time for credit recovery, PSEAT courses, EOC enrichment, college applications, STEM camps, and FAFSA completion. An average of 4,500 students were on campus across the city during the fall intercession, according to statistics reported in October. This is the first year MISD has used intercession weeks as part of the school calendar. Officials said last week they are still analyzing data from mid-year data to see how students might be taking part in intercession progressed. Ultimately, we want to make sure that we're setting up our students for success, said Deputy Superintendent Craig Cuellar. And in most cases, a good, strong academic calendar can do that. Associate Superintendent Charlie Garcia said school leadership is contacting parents to let them know their child's needs to intercession. We are inviting more students to intercession this time around, Garcia said. I think almost 1,400 more students. We really need our parents to support the charge so that we can accelerate those students' learning. Garcia said a healthy group of teachers that have committed to teaching the intercession week will utilize formative assessments daily to help officials track the learning of our students. We want to make sure that we're able to adapt from Monday to Tuesday to Wednesday to Thursday and even that last day. We want to grab that data, the student learning data, and have our teachers really comprehend the data and make adjustments to the learning. We did have formative assessments in the fall, but now they're beefed up. Now we really have a strong sense of how to ensure that that's a successful piece to our intercession. Intercession has been a topic that Midland ISD leaders have dealt with as the 2022-23 calendar is discussed. Ultimately, Cuellar and Garcia stated they can only deal with those things they can control, and that includes the district's second intercession week. My personal opinion is a strong academic calendar is really one ingredient of the whole recipe, Cuellar said. I really think having the right academic calendar in place can absolutely be beneficial to students, which ultimately we want to make sure that we're setting up our students for success. I will tell you that our intercession is academically focused, Garcia added. And so we lean on our leadership to support the academics, so this is like any other day in Midland ISD. The experience that we want children to have during intercession is one that impacts their growth in reading and mathematics, but also one that promotes the love of learning. This is Jane reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram on February 1, Tuesday. Abbott and Paxton to skip forum. A forum featuring the major gubernatorial and attorney general candidates will take place Tuesday at the Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center. But current office holders, Governor Greg Abbott and Attorney General Ken Paxton, have indicated they will not participate. Still, a coalition of local Republican Party groups in the Permian Basin are moving forward with the forum that will feature gubernatorial candidates Chad Prather, Alan West, and Don Huffines. For the Attorney General race, Congressman Louis Gohmert, Land Commissioner George P. Bush, and former State Supreme Court Justice Eva Guzman are scheduled to attend. The forum will be held from 6 to 8 p.m. on Tuesday at the Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center. Ticket prices will range from $7 to $20. The event is being sponsored by the Ector County Republican Women, the Ector County Republican Party, the Midland County Republican Women, the Women National Republican Hispanic Assembly, and the Midland County Young Republicans. The groups will provide questions for the event, which is being moderated by Odessa businessman Kirk Edwards and Reporter-Telegram editor Stuart Doreen. The expectation is candidates for governor will receive up to 5 questions and AG candidates 3 questions. The rules of the event state that the forum is not a debate, no interaction or debate among candidates will be allowed. The rules also state there is time set aside for questions from the audience. This is Jane reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram on Tuesday, February 1. West Texas mourns death of deputy while on dispatch call. Loving County Sheriff's Office has announced the death of Deputy Lauren Redman. At approximately 4:30 p.m. on Saturday, Redman was dispatched to assist another deputy and attempted to respond when she was involved in a traffic accident with a tractor semi-trailer. Redman was pronounced deceased at the scene, according to a press release. Redman, 41, joined the Loving County Sheriff's Office in April of 2019. Redman also served as a reserve deputy with the Hudspeth County Sheriff's Office. She was also a chief petty officer in the United States Navy Reserve, where she served as an intelligence specialist from 2006 until 2018. The Texas Highway Patrol is investigating this crash and offered no additional information.
Hello, this is Cindy, continuing to read from the MRT for Tuesday. How City's CRMWD talks could impact water delivery to county, by Stuart Doreen. The City of Midland is ready to renegotiate its deal with the Colorado River Municipal Water District, and the ramifications could impact future conversations with Midland County and the Midland County Utility District as the entities work to provide water for residents outside the city. Carl Crago, Director of Utilities for the City of Midland, told the Reporter-Telegram a contract for water with the CRMWD, made in 1966, will expire in 2030. However, the city considers the renegotiation a priority for the upcoming year. The Colorado River Municipal Water District delivers water to numerous member and customer cities across West Texas. Midland is considered a customer city. Crago said the current contract with the CRMWD calls for the city to take 16.5 million gallons a day. When renegotiations take place, the city will likely call for a lower amount. Because of the other water sources it has, including the water from T-Bar Ranch in Winkler County, the Paul Davis well fields, the portion of OH Ivy Reservoir that the city owns, and the Fort Stockton holdings. Crago told the Reporter-Telegram that the city averages a total use of 19 million gallons, 13 million in the winter, and the larger amount from the CRMWD is no longer required. One other reason that city officials want to firm up an extension of the contract with CRMWD is the delivery of water to those in the county. City officials are having conversations with county leaders and MCUD officials about providing water to those who currently aren't connected to a water system but are dependent on well water. Three of the five commissioners' court members are on the upcoming Republican primary ballot, and water is a topic in each of their races. One person even referenced the city's deal with the CRMWD during a recent forum. When the idea of the city providing CRMWD water to the county was presented to Precinct 2 Commissioner Robin Donnelly in exchange for rights to the county-owned Rourke Water Field, which also is located in Winkler County, he mentioned how the city's contract runs out in 8 years. Crago didn't mention the politics involved, just that any deal using CRMWD water requires the city to take and treat the water and then potentially move it to points in the system where MCUD would then move it to customers. Rates have been calculated for the city's efforts, factoring in whether the county turns over the water field or not. Water line replacements. The city of Midland will begin replacing 4-inch water lines in older residential areas of Midland with 6-inch lines that are expected to improve water quality. Crago said before any replacements take place, residents in a particular section will be notified, because the placement of lines is likely to result in the water in that area being turned off for 6 to 8 hours. Notifications are expected to happen in the form of flyers being left on doors and announcements on the city's Facebook page and on Nextdoor online pages, depending on the neighborhood. Crago said if a resident sees reddish water during the replacement process, that is likely the city will flush the water out until water quality returns to normal. Aphasia Center presents Chocolate Decadence. The Aphasia Center of West Texas held the Chocolate Decadence fundraiser this past weekend in Odessa. Chocolate Decadence is a night of classic decadent desserts, culinary delights, live and silent auctions, and live music. The fundraiser traditionally raises between 30% to 40% of the nonprofit's annual budget. The nonprofit's mission is to improve the quality of life for individuals and families living with aphasia by overcoming communication barriers at home and in their communities. Aphasia is the loss of the ability to understand or express speech caused by brain damage. Region hit by 10th quake in past week by Stuart Doreen. The U.S. Geological Survey reported that the 10th earthquake in the past week in the immediate region happened early Monday morning north-northeast of Odessa. The USGS showed that around 3:36 a.m., a 2.9 magnitude quake took place 4.34 miles southeast of Gardendale. Initial reports showed the quake to have taken place at a depth of less than a mile. The USGS reports it was the third quake in that area around Odessa since Friday, and the fifth in the last 7 days. The USGS also reported other quakes near Lamesa and Big Spring in the last week. The information shows that the earthquakes range in magnitude from 2.1 to 3.1. The other two quakes this weekend included a 2.5 magnitude quake at 12:14 a.m. Sunday around 6.2 miles south-southeast of Gardendale and 3.1 magnitude quake 5.5 miles south-southeast of Gardendale at 12:21 p.m. Friday. The depths of the two quakes were around 5.5 to 6.2 miles. The past 30 days had been relatively quiet in terms of seismic activity, with 6 earthquakes near Midland during the previous 3 weeks, according to EarthquakeTrack.com. The tracking website shows 249 in the past 365 days. The activity has been greater in far west Texas. EarthquakeTrack.com shows 19 quakes in the past 7 days, 118 quakes in the past 30 days, and 2,448 quakes in the past 365 days near Mentone in Loving County. A quake with a magnitude of 2.5 to 5.4 is often felt, but only causes minor damage, according to UpSeis, an educational site for seismologists. NWS, Wintry Weather to Hit Area Wednesday, by Stuart Doreen. Low temperatures in the single digits and snow are headed to the region, according to the National Weather Service. After above-average high temperatures Monday and Tuesday, the NWS is calling for a front to push into the region. The high temperature in Midland on Wednesday will drop around 25 degrees to 42 degrees. Also expected is a 40% chance of precipitation during the day. On Wednesday night is when wintry weather is expected to hit, according to the National Weather Service. There is a 60% chance of a wintry mix, snow, freezing rain, and sleet before midnight. Then snow is expected. The chance of precipitation is 80%, according to the NWS. Temperatures will fall into the teens on Wednesday night, early Thursday morning. On Thursday, a high temperature of 23 degrees is expected. There is a 30% chance of snow before noon. On Thursday night, the low will fall to around 7 degrees, according to NWS. The rest of the National Weather Service's 7-day forecast includes Friday high 34, low 14, Saturday high 45, low 21. From the opinion page, Opinion Extra, Lots of Questions to be Asked at GOP Forum, by Stuart Doreen. A coalition of local Republican Party groups in the Permian Basin will have a forum for major gubernatorial and attorney general candidates Tuesday at the Wagner Knoll. It should be a good opportunity to become more familiar with those running against Governor Greg Abbott and Attorney General Ken Paxton. I write that because Abbott and Paxton sadly turned down the opportunity to participate. They should be here, and Republicans across the state should demand that the two incumbents share a stage with the major candidates before early voting is set to begin later this month. Those who want to read more about the forum tonight can read the preview in the Tuesday edition. The event will include two moderators, Kirk Edwards and myself. We are set to ask questions that came from an event question committee. One would expect that the border, the pandemic, and voting issues will be addressed. The topics have garnered much of the headlines across the state and tend to get Republicans fired up. We will see what the committee comes up with. For time reasons, I expected there will be other topics not addressed, including those that I believe will have a considerable impact on what is happening in Midland and across the Permian. Here are a few of those I wanted to ask the gubernatorial candidates. Are you willing to advocate for the Railroad Commission to receive the additional funding required to keep up with the oil and gas industry in the 21st century? Governor Greg Abbott has championed considerable increases in transportation funding to the region, even directing the Texas Transportation Commission chairman to work with local officials on making sure priorities are identified and funded. Why is now the right time to see different leadership when it comes to transportation issues? Midland ISD will have sent more than $671 million to the state in recapture payments over the last 10 years as part of the state's school finance plan. This money ends up going to property-poor school districts. Please tell us if your school finance plan allows communities to keep their tax money at home. Most reasonable Texans would agree that the situation at the border is unacceptable. Washington has decided to look the other way as border states are impacted. In the Permian Basin, however, we face the need for more workers. That is true across the board, including construction and the service industry. How do we keep our border secure while still providing opportunity for those who can make a meaningful impact at our local businesses? Why is it okay for the state of Texas to limit local governing boards with their ability to raise revenue every year for necessary improvements that go along with community growth, if it is wrong for the federal government to impose its will on states? Can the same be true of states and municipalities? These are questions that should be asked of candidates, Republican or Democrat, but the forum Tuesday is Republicans, so we will start with them. Feel free to ask your favorite candidate. Either way, let's hear which candidates tell you about the problems and which tell you about the solutions. There is a difference. Obituaries and death notices from the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Tuesday. Alexandra Casement Morris, 87, of Hutto, Texas, passed away January 28. She was born in Grand Junction, Colorado, on August 13, 1934. She married Robert B. Morris on November 28, 1953. She will be missed by her son Dan and her two grandchildren. Her memorial service will be held at the Cook Walden Funeral Home Wednesday, February 2nd at 3 p.m. She will be interred the following morning, as weather permits, at Oakwood Cemetery in Austin. To leave an online condolence for the family, please visit our website at cookwalden.com/capital-parks-funeral-home-and-cemetery. Funeral, cremation, and cemetery, dignitymemorial.com. Christian Glenn Pitts took his seat in heaven next to Jesus on Friday, January 28. He was born on October 21 in Midland, Texas, to Kelly Ann Brooks and Coulter Glenn Pitts. Christian is survived by his dad, Coulter Glenn Pitts of Florence, Colorado, grandmother Carol Gutierrez of Odessa, grandfather Gary Brooks and his wife Jackie of Big Spring, Dennis and Shanna Pitts of Midland, great-grandmothers Audrey Brooks, Mary Briggs, and Wilma Rogers, all of Midland, aunts and uncles, great-aunts and uncles, cousins, and other loved ones. The family will receive visitors from 1 p.m. to 2 p.m. on Wednesday, February 2nd, at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home in Odessa. Funeral and burial service to follow at 2 p.m. Pastor John Sladen with Hope Community Church will officiate. To send condolences to the family, please sign his guest book at www.sunsetodessa.com. Delma G. Carrasco, 64, of Midland, passed away Thursday, January 27th. She is preceded in death by her husband, Enrique B. Carrasco, and father, Nieves Gutierrez. Delma is survived by her sons, Ismael Smiley Hinojos, and wife, Erica, Daniel G. Carrasco, and wife, Anna, Henry Tweedy G. Carrasco, and wife, Gina, Samuel G. Carrasco, and her grandchildren. A rosary was held Monday, January 31st, at Nellie Picklin Welch Funeral Home. Funeral services will be Tuesday, February 1st, at 9 a.m. at Our Lady of Guadalupe Church in Midland, and reception following the service at Rolling Sevens Ranch Ceremony Room in Odessa. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Maria Aurelia Martinez, 78, of Midland, passed away on Saturday, January 29th, surrounded by her family. Rosary was held at 7 p.m. on Monday, January 31st, at the branch at NPW. Funeral Mass will be held at 12 p.m. on Tuesday, February 1st, at San Miguel Catholic Church, with burial to follow at St. Lawrence Cemetery. Maria was born on June 26, 1943, to Magdalena and Rosario Tovar in Mexico. She is preceded in death by her parents, three precious daughters, and her loving son-in-law, Jose Azuhe. She is survived by her daughters, Jovita Azuhe, Juanita Juarez, and Tony, Mary Watson and Sean, Lupe Guevara and David, Susie Finney and Randy, Margarita Strahan and Robert, her sons Rafael Martinez and Gabriela, Roque Martinez and Geneva, Javier Martinez and Stephanie. She is also survived by 21 grandchildren and 4 great-grandchildren. In lieu of flowers, the family requests donations be made to the village at Manor Park Younger Center Alzheimer's Care Center at Our Lady of Guadalupe Catholic Church in Midland. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Pascual Juarez Martinez II, 74, of Midland, died January 28th at Covenant Medical Center in Lubbock, with his family by his side. Pascual was born October 17, 1947, in Midland, to Elena Juarez Martinez and Pascual Martinez Sr. Pascual is survived by his wife Yolanda, his children Rhonda Youngblood and her husband Larry and Stephen Martinez, and his grandchildren. He was preceded in death by his parents and siblings Theodol Alva, Jimmy Martinez, and Edia Hernandez. A rosary will be held 7 p.m. Tuesday, February 1st, at Nellie Picklin Welch Funeral Home Chapel in Midland. Funeral Mass will be held 10 a.m. Wednesday, February 2nd, at St. Stephen's Catholic Church in Midland, with burial at Fairview Cemetery. In lieu of flowers, donations may be made to the American Diabetes Association of the Permian Basin. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Guadalupe Peña, 74, of Midland, passed away Sunday, January 30th. Viewing will be Tuesday, February 1st from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m., with a prayer service starting at 7 p.m. Tuesday evening at Heavenly Gate Funeral Home. Funeral service is set for Wednesday, February 2nd at 2:30 p.m., also at Heavenly Gate Funeral Home Chapel. Burial will follow at American Heritage. Harry Spanos, 91, of Midland, passed away January 27th. The family will receive guests from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. Friday, February 4th, at Nellie Picklin Welch Funeral Home. Funeral service will be held at 3 p.m. Saturday, February 5th, at First Presbyterian Church in Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Juanita F. Steigen, 85, of Kerrville, passed away January 30th. Graveside service will be held at 1 p.m. Thursday, February 3rd, at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Lloyd Oren Fitz, Sr., 86, of Odessa, died Thursday, January 27th in Odessa. Chapel service will be February 4th at American Heritage Funeral Home. Burial immediately following at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Arrangements are by American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory of Midland. Maxine Polk Bunton, 69, of Midland, passed away Monday, January 24th. Viewing will be Tuesday, February 1st, from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m., with a receiving of friends from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Tuesday evening at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home. Funeral service is set for Wednesday, February 2nd, at 11 a.m., also at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Chapel. Burial will follow at Rest Haven North. Robert D. Briley, 77, of Odessa, died Wednesday, January 26th, in Odessa. Graveside service will be held at 1 p.m. February 1st at American Heritage Cemetery. Arrangements are by American Heritage Cemetery, Funeral Home Crematory of Midland. Ronald Carlson, 66, of Midland, passed away on Saturday, January 29th. The family will receive friends from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. Tuesday, February 1st, at Nally Picklin Welch Funeral Home. Funeral service will be held at 4 p.m. Friday, February 4th, at Nally Picklin Welch Funeral Home Chapel. Burial will be held at 3 p.m. Saturday, February 5th, in Cranfield's Gap at the Old Rock Church Cemetery. Sheila Prescott Martin, 67, of Midland, passed away January 30th. Celebration of Life will be held at 10 a.m. Friday, February 4th, at the Branch at NPW. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Tommy Jones, 64, of Midland, passed away January 30th. Celebration of Life will be held at 2 p.m. Thursday, February 3rd, at Cotton Flat Baptist Church. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com.
Good morning. This is Kim. I am reading the Odessa American. Today's date is Tuesday, February 1st, 2022. Odessa Fire Rescue details Sunday's explosion. An explosion caused a fire Sunday night in the residential area of the 9,000 block of West 26th Street. Fortunately, there were no injuries involved. Odessa Fire Battalion Chief Bradley Reese spoke at a press conference Monday at Central Fire Station, detailing more of the situation that happened Sunday. A truck being stored was carrying chemicals used in fracking and is believed to have caused the fire, but the cause is still being investigated. The explosion happened at around 9:45 p.m. Sunday. Odessa Fire Rescue and West Odessa Volunteer Fire Department were called out for a report of a vehicle fire, Reese said. En route, the information that we were given was that it was actually a chemical truck and there had been an explosion. When units arrived on scene, they found a flatbed trailer fully engulfed, then later figured out that it was carrying various chemicals in some large totes. However, no one was hurt, and there's no longer a risk of danger in the area. There was some damage to the trailer, obviously, Reese said. We found out that these were various chemicals used in fracking that they were storing for disposal. Possibly things got mixed around and created the combustion. Reese said the explosion occurred in the middle of the neighborhood. There was a little bit of concern of what the chemicals were in the smoke in the area, Reese said, but the crews got out on the scene and cleared out the area, and within 2 hours the whole area was cleared out. Reese continued that the explosion happened in a yard that was large enough to where the explosion was confined to that area, and the damage was very minimal. He said it took about 30 minutes to get the fire under control, with the investigation still ongoing. The rest of the time on the scene were just containing the spills in that area, Reese said. TCEQ was notified and responded, and they're taking the investigation from there. Reese said that residents in the area were alarmed by the event. There were a lot of bystanders, Reese said. It was in a residential area, so it was a little bit scary for those neighbors. They obviously felt that explosion, so we got a lot of calls on it. Luckily, nobody was injured. Travis provides blankets of love. What started out as a service project at Travis Elementary School for the Ector County District Attorney's Victim Assistance Program has turned into a meaningful and warm partnership. With the recent unification of the county and district attorney's office, the Victim Assistance Program has merged as well and now has four people. They also have a special room on the third floor of the Ector County Courtroom where victims and or families of victims stay during trials. Director of Administrative Services, Linda Granados, said it can get cold in the room and the courtrooms. About 50 students in the after-school tutoring program at Travis recently offered some warmth in the form of blankets. Students have made many of them, but teachers and staff have also purchased some. A lot of times we have kids. A lot of times we have elderly people. The blanket is just a way of keeping them safe and warm during the process while they're here, Granados said. She added that her office partnered with the school more than a year ago as a way to give back to the community. We were just doing service projects for them. We would send thank you cards to the teachers. We would take pizza, just different appreciation things that we did for them, and they in turn had served us, Granados said. Victim Assistance Coordinator Yvette Ramirez recalled a day when there were two small children and a two-year-old girl used a blanket to take a nap. So Ramirez found another small blanket and made a pillow for her. Her brother, who was three, used a blanket to cover his lap and was coloring. Before Travis students provided the blankets, victims' assistants didn't have any. Now they have about 60, Granados said. Now we can just give them away, she said. The blankets are kept in plastic bags. They got the first batch before Christmas break and another a couple of weeks later. Granados said this is the first time they have donated the blankets. Anybody who is a victim of a crime in Ector County for a felony or a misdemeanor is considered a victim. Either they stole something from them, were a victim of domestic violence, saw a murder, all the family victims of the deceased. They're all considered victims, Granados said. When we have trials, which we've had trials here in Ector County all year long, we had about 34 trials last year. We haven't stopped, and our victims come in. They come in to meet with the attorneys, and our victim services are their advocate. They're with them throughout the whole thing. They hold their hand in the trial. We provide them a safe place to be in. Trials can be lengthy, so they're here past five. Then they bring food in here. They eat here during the lunch hour. They're having to stay here, especially when we have a trial, because they have to be here if they're going to testify, or they're just part of moral support for the family in the trial, she added. Granados took Travis Principal Amy Russell on a tour of the victim assistance area one day, explained the services that are provided, and told Russell about the four team members. I brought her up here and showed her this area, and I said this was a new area that District Attorney Dusty Gallivan developed on the third floor of the courthouse, Granados said. There also is a conference room where people can stay while waiting to go into court. There also is a conference room on the second floor. The outside door to the room with the blankets is tinted so no one can see in. One of the things Russell noticed was that it was cold. Granados told her the courtrooms were typically cold as well. The school also provided a water dispenser. Russell said her first thought was that she had a teacher who could show everyone how to make blankets. But I also have a large group of students in after-school tutoring who need a really engaging project that would benefit our community as well as allow Travis to give back to those who had given us school supplies. Supplies clothes for kids, snacks for teachers, notes of encouragement for students. So this is how Operation Blankets of Love was able to give back to the community, while at the same time allowing students to have hands-on, real-world counting, measuring, cutting, discussing, problem-solving, and reaching a goal, she said. It really is a win-win for our students and is aligned to our career and community magnet theme. The kids were so proud of their work. Linda and her victim's assistance team came and collected the blankets, and the students just beamed with pride, she added. About 50 fourth and fifth grade students took part in the after-school tutoring Monday at Travis, Assistant Principal Jennifer Hagler said. The students can tie math into the blankets, which Hagler said helped with the tutoring. Dana Rodriguez, 10, said it makes her happy to help other people. Anai Lozano and Alexander DePaz, both 10, said they mean happiness and comfort, respectively. Mindy Gutierrez, 10, said it felt like minus 60 degrees in court. Hagler said she thinks they will keep Operation Blankets of Love going. We work really well with the district attorney's office They've been partnering with our schools as far as leadership and other things. So we get lucky enough that we get to help other people that have been impacted here, Hagler said. OC looks to fill workforce needs. In the next couple of years, Odessa College will begin offering two new degrees, an Associate in Construction Management and a Bachelor's of Applied Arts and Sciences in Early Childhood Education. The Construction Management degree is planned to start in fall 2022, Vice President for Instruction Tremaine Anderson said. It has a Level 1, Level 2 certificate. We really created the whole degree all the way to the ASS Associate of Applied Science and really even into the BAAS Bachelor of Applied Arts and Sciences as well, Anderson said. She added that the whole curriculum is lined up. The backing came as a result of the Texas Reskilling Upskilling Capacity Grant from Governor Abbott, where he received money from the federal government for emergency relief as a result of COVID. And they wanted to help upskill and reskill workers. That true capacity grant opened up and the opportunity for us to create a construction management level 1 certificate. But we wanted to go ahead and create a whole program, Anderson said. The college has an eye toward offering a BAAS track in the field. A recent state law allows community colleges to offer up to 5 bachelor degrees. OC has 3, with the early childhood degree coming in 2023. It would be underneath the leadership and management degree. It wouldn't be its own. So what we did is innovated under the ExxonMobil leadership and management with an additional track, Anderson said. She noted that construction is the 4th largest industry in the Permian Basin. I found it interesting because not only are we growing as far as homes being built, new apartments, but we also have to think about construction on the side of oil and gas production with refineries with pipelines, Anderson said. Construction for the oil and gas industry could include anything from building workforce homes to construction so companies can drill. We want to be able to provide that program because construction management is more project-based. Of course, we'll have the technology aspect of it, where you do have workers that are working in roles doing the building, but construction management is more of a project-based coordination, facilitation of a project. So on-site, off-site, looking at those aspects, you're working with the company engineers. You're working with that group to supervise a project to make sure that you know it's going in the direction that it needs to, Anderson said. Road construction is also an aspect of construction management. So that industry is way beyond just home building, which is a good part of it, but also other industries as well, she said. Projected annual openings for construction managers shown at a recent Odessa College Board of Trustees meeting was 133 annual openings and median salary of $107,364. There are a projected 721 annual openings in frontline supervisor of construction trade jobs with a median salary of $79,443 and 31 projected annual openings in civil engineering construction technicians with a median salary of $51,838. She said there have been discussions about creating pathways between continuing education and the credit side. I think it's going to be a great program for students that will be interested in pursuing a fuller pathway and thinking about their career because that's what we're here for. And that's what I said the other night, creating careers, not just jobs. But they're so that folks can take care of their families and think about long-term benefits as a result of a career, Anderson said. OC has an Associate of Applied Sciences in Early Childhood Development, so that's thinking about a pathway for if you want to become a teacher, but more so if you wanted a daycare learning center worker. And we know that those positions and jobs, the pay probably could be better in those areas. but this also gives folks an opportunity to maybe think about having their own early childhood center or a learning center, or working for a public or private provider. But there's also the other pathway that we have. We have early childhood through six, which is an associate of arts in teaching. Either one of those pathways could go directly into the Bachelor of Applied Arts and Sciences in Early Childhood Education, Anderson said. For elementary school teachers, projected openings shown at the board meeting were 167, with a median salary of $52,090. Starting teacher salaries for ECISD were a little over $57,000 annually. 46 openings yearly were projected for preschool teachers with a median salary of $54,120 and 38 openings annually for child, family, and school social workers with a median salary of $51,666. Anderson said Ector County's college going rate is good, but the oil and gas industry can prompt people to leave college temporarily or stop out to work. That's probably a testament to the industry and how well we're doing. Then maybe when things are down, they come back to school. That's how I've known it all my life. Growing up around here, it's kind of boom and bust, and depending on your enrollment. But we've been so fortunate to have a great team that is steady, thinking about enrollment, thinking about creating new programs, given whatever we are in our economic setup. That way, that students can have the opportunity to take care of themselves and their families, Anderson said. COVID-19 news by the numbers. COVID in the basin. Ector County, 35,828 total cases, 606 deaths. Midland County, 35,051 total cases, 442 deaths. Texas, 6,224,480 total cases, 79,335 deaths. U.S. cases, 74,282,892 total confirmed and 881,887 deaths. Find out more at covidinthebasin.com or the CDC site at tinyurl.com/TZTRJLF. See the ECISD COVID-19 dashboard at tinyurl.com/Y6NTPTUQ. Free drive-through COVID-19 tests. The City of Odessa Incident Command is partnering with Curative to offer the COVID-19 PCR tests drive-through from 8 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. Monday through Friday at the corner of 2nd Street and Grant Avenue. Insurance information will be requested. If no insurance, test will be free. To book an appointment, visit curative.com. The City of Odessa, in partnership with DOCS Health, have scheduled drive-through COVID-19 testing from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday through Sunday at the UTPB Community Sports Fields parking lot located at 191 and Loop 338. The entrance will be located on the 191 Access Road on 42nd Street, and exit will be on Loop 338. The site will have both PCR tests and rapid antigen tests available. This will be the second COVID-19 testing site set up by the city with no out-of-pocket cost. No appointment needed. However, online registration is available. Testing is subject to daily availability of material. PCR test results are expected within 2 to 3 days in most cases, and rapid test results will be a 15 to 20 minute wait at the site, or you can receive your test via text message. To pre-register, visit docshealthtesting.com or text DOCSTX to 41411. Health insurance information will be requested if available. For more information, call the DOCS Health Call Center at 267-362-5207. Quick Hits, Building Bots, Petroleum Museum, 1500 West I-20, Midland, has scheduled a Building Bots for Kids, grades K through 2, from 5:30 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. today. Pre-registration is required. For more information, call 432-683-4403 or visit petroleummuseum.org. Permian Basin Gubernatorial and Attorney General Forum. Permian Basin Republicans have scheduled a Permian Basin Gubernatorial and Attorney General Forum at 6:30 p.m. today at the Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center, 1310 Farm to Market, 1788 Midland. Doors open at 5 p.m. This event will give Republicans all around West Texas the opportunity to hear from four of the gubernatorial candidates and three of the attorney general candidates. Participating candidates are Chad Prather, Alan West, Don Huffines, Candy K. Horn, Eva Guzman, George P. Bush, and Louis Gohmert. Tickets are $7 to $20. For tickets or more information, visit wagnernoel.com. Town Halls. Ector County Judge Candidate Dustin Fawcett has scheduled at 6 p.m. at the following dates and locations. Today, Kellis Turner Community Center, 2230 Sycamore Drive. Thursday, Gardendale Community Center, 4226 East Larkspur Lane, Gardendale. February 8th, South Ector Community Center, 4455 West Apple Street. For more information, email dustin@dustinfawcett.com or visit tinyurl.com/BDEHYRRF. Trey Kennedy, the Are You For Real Tour. The Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center, 1310 North FM 1788 Midland, will present Trey Kennedy, the Are You For Real Tour at 7 p.m. Wednesday. Doors open at 6 p.m. For tickets or information, visit wagnernoel.com. Outstanding Citizens of the Year Luncheon. The Odessa Chamber of Commerce will honor Medical Center Health System and Odessa Regional Medical Center professionals at the 2021 Outstanding Citizens of the Year Luncheon at 11:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. Thursday at the Odessa Marriott Hotel and Conference Center, 305 East 5th Street. To register or for more information, visit bit.ly/3Q0VZGZ or call Lynn Van Amberg at 432-333-7862 or email lynnva@odessachamber.com. Film Series. Ellen Noel Art Museum, 4909 East University Boulevard, has scheduled a film series event from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Thursday. The PBS series, The Black Church, will be played in four segments to celebrate Black History Month. This event happens every Thursday of February. Thursday, Episode 1, The Freedom Faith. February 10th, Episode 2, A Nation Within a Nation. February 17th, Episode 3, God Will Make a Way. February 24th, Episode 4, Crisis of Faith. For more information about this event, call 432-550-9696 or visit tinyurl.com/29DUDW73. Comedy Night. Comedy Night has been scheduled at 7:30 p.m. Thursday at Cactus House, 114 East 29th Street. Featured entertainment will be presented by Jenny Moore and Veterans of Comedy members Chris Crawford, Mike Shield, and Isaac Gutierrez. Admission is $10 at the door. BYOB with ID. visit tinyurl.com/MW7TSUX. Charlotte's Web Auditions. Permian Basin Works has scheduled auditions for Charlotte's Web from 6:30 p.m. to 9:30 p.m. Thursday, from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. Saturday, and from 6:30 p.m. to 7:45 p.m. February 7th at the Permian Playhouse, 310 West 42nd Street. Callbacks will be from 8 p.m. to 9:30 p.m. February 7th. All kiddos and young adults from elementary school to college ages are invited to be part of the show. Show will run April 22nd, 23rd, 24th, 29th, 30th, and May 1st. This show is directed by Sarah Kate Billingsley and stage managed by Julie Prentice. Feel free to bring a prepared monologue if you have one. Do not worry if you have nothing prepared. We will have monologues available for a cold read. For audition forms or more information, visit tinyurl.com/488MN7UB. Landgraf wants Star canceled this year. State Representative Brooks Landgraf, Republican, Odessa, submitted a letter to Texas Education Agency Commissioner Mike Morath on Friday, calling for a suspension of STAR testing during the 2021-2022 school year. "I've always opposed high-stakes testing," Landgraf said in a news release. "We have all the same reasons to suspend the STAR test in 2020 that we had in 2022. Only now, there seems to be even greater mental health concerns in our public schools. We need to cancel administration of the STAR test in 2022 and take what we've learned from the last few years to come up with a different assessment method for the future." In 2020, after receiving calls to cancel the STAR test from Landgraf and other legislators, Morath obtained waivers from the U.S. Department of Education to waive statewide assessment and accountability requirements for the 2019-2020 school year because of the COVID-19 pandemic. States are required to assess student and teacher progress annually in order to draw down federal dollars for public education funding unless waivers are granted by the federal government. "I understand that assessment is necessary, but the high-stakes nature of our current system does not work, and that is especially true in times of crisis like we are experiencing now," Landgraf continued in the release. "That is why I have joined with West Texas students, parents, and teachers in calling for the STAR test to be canceled in 2020, 2021, and now again in 2022, and why I will continue fighting to eliminate high-stakes testing when the legislature reconvenes for the next legislative session." In 2021, Landgraf joint authored House Bill 764, which would have reduced testing requirements as much as allowable by federal law, eliminating the writing test for 4th and 7th graders, as well as the social studies test for 8th graders, and replacing end-of-course exams for high schoolers with a process to allow high school students to take the SAT or ACT instead. HB 764 passed out of the Texas House of Representatives with overwhelming support, 136-6, but was not taken up for the consideration in the Texas Senate prior to the end of the 87th Texas legislative session. Members of the Texas House and Senate will convene at the Texas Capitol for the next legislative session on January 10th, 2023, the release said.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.